Al Jazeera Podcasts.
Today, where in the world is Jair Bolsonaro? If he can help it, not in Brazil. Facing legal troubles, the former president is turning to friends abroad.
Legitimacy is transnational in many ways, so Bolsonaro wouldn't get that far without international support.
I'm Malika Bilal, and this is The Take. Usually a post-head of state job is pretty quiet. Give some speeches, take on a pet charity project, maybe write a book. But since rejecting the results of the election he lost in 2022, former Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro has been living a different kind of life.
Bolsonaro and his former aides are accused of plotting a military coup to remain in power after his presidential defeat in October of 2022.
As his supporters protest, Bolsonaro is in Florida. This is video of his vacation home in Kissimmee.
Much like Trump, he's been spending his free time raising doubts about the integrity of the election from the comfort of his Florida compound.
I talked to someone who's been watching it all in the name of research.
I'm Guilherme Casarões. I'm a political scientist and a professor at the Getúlio Vargas Foundation in São Paulo, Brazil. And I'm currently a visiting professor at Brown University.
Welcome to The Take. It's good to have you here. We're going to do a little rewind to start because I want to go back to December of 2022. The current president of Brazil, Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, is about to be inaugurated. And instead of handing over the presidential sash to him, the outgoing president, Jair Bolsonaro, leaves town. About a week later, his supporters stage an attempted coup in Brazil. Take us back to that time. I know that you were in Sao Paulo then. What was it like?
Well, I was in Sao Paulo watching the unfolding of events with a lot of dismay, to be honest, because we kind of knew that Bolsonaro was not willing to pass the sash to Lula, but we didn't really imagine that he would flee the country the day before inauguration. Inauguration in Brazil takes place on January 1st. So when Bolsonaro left the country, the first thing I thought was, well, he's making everything he can not to pass the sash, and this is understandable because he's been talking about it for so long.
Was it a fair campaign? Obviously, it was not fair. It was biased.
Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro refuses to say he lost his country's presidential election, despite the fact that he lost his country's presidential election.
But in any case, what we didn't expect was that 1 week after inauguration, some pro-Bolsonaro supporters would riot in the capital city of Brasilia, would destroy everything they could in the presidential palace, in the Supreme Court building, in the Congress building. So we kind of started to see the whole movie of January 6th all over again. Pro-Bolsonaro rioters seemed to be following the very same script as the one that took place on January 6th.
So January 6th, of course, for our listeners, is the insurrection date here in the United States. So as all of this is going on, Bolsonaro isn't there, as you mentioned. He is holed up in the U.S. state of Florida. And reports start coming out that he's staying at the home of a famous Brazilian mixed martial arts star near Disney World. Videos emerge on social media of him doing the kinds of thing that any other retired person in Florida might do. So him going to the grocery store, visiting fast food chains.
Jair Bolsonaro is in Donald Trump and Ron DeSantis' Florida, living it up in Kissimmee and hitting up Publix and KFC.
What is he doing there at this time? What do you think the state has to offer him at that point?
Well, there are two ways to look at it. One that we knew at the time, there are so many Brazilians, middle to upper class Brazilians, live in or spending their vacations in Florida. So it was natural for Bolsonaro to meet some Brazilians who are actually his supporters. If you look at the votes, by the Brazilian diaspora in the United States. Florida concentrates the largest number of pro-Bolsonaro votes in the 2022 elections, for example. So it's not really surprising that he decided to go to Florida. It's a place where he has a lot of friends. It's a place he could, walk around. Not to mention the fact, of course, that Florida has become one of the bunkers of the far-right movement of both the United States and Brazil. So that's one way to look at it. The other way to look at it, which now we know because of recent federal police investigations, trying to look into what Bolsonaro was really doing in Florida, kind of tells us a different story, because now we know that Bolsonaro was trying to be away from Brazil while the coup attempt was unfolding, so that he couldn't be blamed for it in any way. Mm. So it was an alibi for him to be out of the country at the time. But now we know that he, for example, forged his vaccine records to be able to come to the United States, and he needed the vaccination, the COVID-19 vaccination records up to date. He forged that he had the shots. So he came to the United States waiting for the coup to unfold. His expectation, apparently, was to be able to return to Brazil within a few months after the generals had taken over, so they could hand over power back to him, canceling the results of elections in Brazil.
Wow. Okay, so you mentioned the forged vaccination records, and I want to get into that because it actually ended up being 3 eventful months that he spent in Florida, and then he returned to Brazil. And he's been in legal limbo ever since, which has only gotten worse for him in the last couple of months. The government seized his passport in February.
Brazilian federal police at the home of former President Jair Bolsonaro, police confiscated Bolsonaro's passport, and search warrants were carried out against several members of his inner circle.
So travels are on hold for now while the investigation is ongoing, and there are several investigations. So walk me through what he's being investigated for, from least important to the most important.
Well, there are the vaccination records, the forged vaccination records, for which he was recently indicted.
Federal police accuse Bolsonaro and his aides of tampering with a public health database to make it appear as though they and others had received the COVID vaccine.
During the pandemic, Bolsonaro openly rallied against the vaccine, despite the Latin American country at one point having the highest daily COVID death rate.
So that's the most official of the cases the federal police and the judiciary are looking into. But there are some others. He's been investigated for illegally selling jewelry that he received as gifts from foreign countries, from Saudi Arabia more specifically. He decided to sell some of these jewelry to international buyers. And it was all mediated by some of his right-hand people. So that's the second investigation that's ongoing. And then there's a third one, which is by far the most consequential of these investigations, that has to do with the coup. And we didn't know much about it until February this year, 2024. And that's the reason why he got his passport confiscated by the federal police. Because up until February, we had a lot of hypotheses as to what Bolsonaro was planning prior to the 2022 elections, why he refused to, accept the election's results, why he was trying to stir his own supporting base into trying to come up with demands for military intervention in the country, and so on and so forth. But now we have so many of these pieces to help us complete this puzzle. So apparently, as early as July 2022, a few months before the national elections that year, Bolsonaro was planning how to overturn the election results. And of course, he was trying to do it by declaring a state of siege or a state of intervention in the country to prevent the election results from being officially recognized. And he was, of course, trying to spread the biggest of fake news in Brazil, which is the electoral fraud allegations that he was trying to put forth.
We want clean, honorable elections and public counting of votes. I cannot participate in a farce like this, sponsored by the president of the Electoral High Court.
even now, 2 years after the election season, there are so many Brazilians who still believe that the 2022 elections were not valid and who refuse to see Lula as their legitimate president. So these are ongoing investigations. There's no formal indictment as of yet, but this is probably the most dangerous for Bolsonaro because it's not just a crime like a petty crime. It's a crime against democracy. It's a crime against the Constitution. And this is probably what's going to lead Bolsonaro to behind bars in case it happens.
More on that after the break.
Get your news in less than 3 minutes, three times per day with the Al Jazeera News Updates. Just ask your home device to play the news by Al Jazeera or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
So, Guilherme, a recent New York Times investigation found that Bolsonaro did something unusual a few days after his passport was seized. On February 12th, he spent two nights at the Hungarian embassy. And we see this grainy security camera footage that has come out weeks after the visit took place. What do we know now about why he might have been there?
So what we know is that Bolsonaro spent 2 days, two nights to be precise, in the Hungarian embassy in Brasilia for no apparent reason because Bolsonaro has his own house in the capital city. And according to his own lawyers, the reason why he was there was to, you know, make contact with authorities in Hungary to, you know, foster good diplomatic relationships with friendly country, which is Hungary. The thing is that Bolsonaro is no longer the president. So why would he need to foster good diplomatic relations with a foreign country that's well beyond his own capacity as an ordinary citizen? So what we assume at this point was that Bolsonaro was seeking asylum in the Hungarian embassy. Because after his passport was seized on February 8th, Bolsonaro couldn't leave the country. And one day the federal police could just knock on his door and arrest him. We cannot tell exactly what Bolsonaro was doing there for sure because we don't know the records. Our Ministry of Foreign Affairs has summoned the Hungarian ambassador to ask him about what Bolsonaro was doing there, and he kept silent for the entire conversation.
Bolsonaro himself has not denied being at the embassy, he says. I won't deny I was at the embassy. I have a circle of friends with some world leaders. They're worried. And perhaps among that circle is another right-wing leader that he knows, Benjamin Netanyahu. So in the last couple of weeks, Bolsonaro has been trying to get his passport back and get back to globetrotting, this time in service of a relationship with Netanyahu. The Israeli prime minister invited Bolsonaro to Israel next month. What is that relationship like?
Well, I think that both Hungary and Israel are great role models for the far right in Western countries, and that includes the US and Brazil. So they look up to Hungary, they look up to Israel, and they see countries that have somehow completed the cycle of, you know, authoritarian takeover of democratic institutions and the construction of this ethno-nationalist or ethno-religious kind of society. So in many ways, Israel and Hungary, they are very similar as to what they represent to figures, far-right politicians like Bolsonaro himself. The other thing is that both have been very successful in undermining institutions from within. Netanyahu is battling against the Supreme Court right now. Orbán has been able to undermine the Supreme Court to, you know, take over Congress, to seize power. So this is also something that from a strategic point of view, is also very good for far-right politicians from all over the world who look up to these countries as models of success. And then there's a third thing which has to do with transnational ties. Not only are these leaders like Netanyahu and Orbán providing narratives, providing strategies to other far-right leaders across the world, as they're also helping them fund their movements, helping them organize this transnational narrative that becomes much more legitimate as it becomes transnational. So that's the reason why, for example, we have CPACs, we have the conservative political action conferences taking place not only in the United States, but also in Brazil and in Budapest.
We make CPAC Hungary great, and hopefully next year we would make it great again.
We are honored to bring CPAC to Israel. We go to Brazil, we go to Australia, we go to Korea, we go to Japan. We go all over this world, and we're going to go all over the country.
They are trying to create this transnational network of far-right thinkers, of far-right politicians, of far-right journalists, far-right, you know, cultural warriors, to put it like this, so that the far-right can get to power in every corner of the world.
This transnational network wouldn't be anything without one more name, and that, of course, is Donald Trump's. And for people who are more familiar with U.S. politics than perhaps Brazilian or Israeli ones, a lot of what you've been saying might seem eerily familiar to the case of former U.S. President Donald Trump. A former president is accused of fomenting a coup after his supporters attacked government institutions. That president camps out in Florida as federal officials investigate his involvement in those attacks. Noted right-wing political strategist Steve Bannon makes an appearance and lends his support. And he is cementing ties with other right-wing leaders like Viktor Orban, even while out of office. Those are all just surface-level parallels. Are there more there with those two individuals that you see, Trump and Bolsonaro?
Of course. I mean, Bolsonaro's legitimacy has always hinged on Trump's legitimacy in many ways. So Bolsonaro, when he decided he would run for president in Brazil, he started to compare himself to Trump.
I'm an admirer of President Trump. He wants a great United States. I want a great Brazil.
He started to say, this is my role model. I want to be the tropical Trump. And that's where he got his nickname from. And Bannon, of course, Bannon is not a lone wolf constructing this huge international network of far-right movements.
Controversial former Trump campaign boss Steve Bannon has turned his gaze to Europe.
He's pouring millions of dollars into polling and public relations to help to create a voting bloc in Brussels that will further extend the influence of Europe's right-wing populists.
Bannon is certainly one of the most important links because as early as 2016, when Trump got elected, Bannon decided to travel the world selling or promoting this far-right ideology. He's been very open about the possibility of creating an international of nationalists around the world. As Trump was voted out of office in 2020, Brazil became even more important because Brazil represented the continuity of these far-right policies that were taking place. And Bannon was very explicit about it.
Jair Bolsonaro is going to face the most dangerous leftist in the world, Lula, a criminal, a communist, and supported by all the media here in the United States, all the left-wing media. This election is the second most important election in the world.
If Trump comes back to the White House, it's going to be much easier for Bolsonaro to make his own comeback to the political scene in Brazil. Bolsonaro is currently barred from running in elections. He cannot run for office because the electoral court has decided so. But it's possible to turn the tables. And of course, with a little help from the White House, it's going to be even easier for Bolsonaro to return to Brazilian politics.
Wow. Well, final question here, Guilherme. There is one more parallel to mention, and that is that both Trump and Bolsonaro still have serious source of support within their country. As a political scientist watching the far right, what is it like seeing Bolsonaro's support stay steady, even as he deals with all of these legal cases?
It's devastating, and I say this as a citizen, but it's not surprising from a political science point of view. Our countries have become polarized in such a way that dialogue is no longer possible. So I think that as I watch the unfolding of events in Brazil and compare to whatever was happening in the United States, however dismaying this is, it's not surprising because that's the state of our democracies. And of course, the only way to fix our democracies in the long run will be to restore our capacity to talk to one another. And I hope we get there soon, but I'm not really optimistic as to whether this will be possible or not.
And that's The Take. This episode was produced by Nagin Oliayi, with Varanisa Kampana, Chloe K. Lee, Sariel Khalili, Ashish Malhotra, Amy Walters, Khalid Sultan, Miranda Lin, David Enders, Sonia Bagat, Zaina Butter, and me, Malika Bilal. Our sound designer is Alex Roldan. Alexandra Locke is The Take's executive producer, and Nay Alvarez is Al Jazeera's head of audio. We'll be back tomorrow.